Thanks. Thanks for inviting me. Can this talk called F fields? At the start, I'm picking a prime number. Okay. And, I'd be thinking about the field with a prime number of elements. And an algebraic closure of that. And so this is a field containing this field. You think about its automorphism group. There's an element in this Galois group called Frobenius. So if I have an element of this algebraically closed field, it's, value under Frobenius is x to the pth power. And so topologically generates this Galois group. So this Galois group, well, maybe there's some slightly unfortunately large profinite group acting on K, but it's really this Frobenius element that that does something interesting. So there's a standard analogy. That FP is like a circle. And this Frobenius automorphism of an algebraic closure of FP is like the generator for the fundamental group of a circle. So this lecture, what it's about is like, what if we took this really literally? Like Amelia Bedelia, literally. Okay, so here's a definition. So let M be a manifold. So an F field on M is a locally constant sheaf of fields in the sense of algebra whose fibers are algebraic closures of FP. So the best example is the F field on a circle. Right, so the fiber fiber above some point is this algebraic closure. Maybe some base point of that circle is this algebraic closure, and the monodromy around the circle is given by this Frobenius map. So I'm going to call that one something, maybe S1 subscript FP. Maybe there's also there's a different circle carrying a different F field I might call S1 Fp to the ninth power, where the monodromy acts by Frobenius to the ninth power. And maybe to keep them straight, maybe it's you could think of this circle as having a circumference log p. And this one has circumference 9 times log p. Well, so that this, the intuition is that this is really trying to be, I'm trying to think of it as the field with p elements. The field with p elements has a finite extension with p to the ninth elements. So I'd like this circle representing p to the ninth elements to be a covering space of it, this with Galois group Z mod 9. That's it. The volume of the covering space should be 9 times the volume of the base. So the base volume should be, well, okay, that's it. Maybe also there's S1 F2 has circumference log 2, and S1 F3 has circumference log 3, and you're not going to get confused about which one is which, since the volumes are not commensurate. Well, of an F field? Sure, yeah, the sections, the global sections of this F field. So I'm going to call this F field, call it, this isn't really inspired notation, but I'll use it a few different times, underlined K, K with an underline. So the fiber is K, the monodromy is something interesting. So to indicate that it's a local system, I'll underline this K. And then the global sections of S1 Fp with the global sections of the sheaf K underlined over S1 Fp is Fp. So there are a finite number of sections. So every other good example is pulled back from this one.
That's just the statement that the Galois group was generated as he had. Is that what that sentence is encoding?
Well, this sentence is not quite equivalent, right? So every other good example is so here's a different definition of F field. Let M be a manifold. An F field is a map. I'll call it like maybe some fancy F, fancy lowercase F, from M to that circle. And okay, they're not quite equivalent because the Galois group of K over Fp is z hat, and the fundamental group of the circle is only z. So there are some weird algebraic, locally constant sheaves of algebraically closed fields, even on a circle where the monodromy would be something weird, not Frobenius or not some integer power of Frobenius, but something weird. But weird, but not that interesting. Like you take Frobenius and raise it to the power of a profinite integer. Anyway, I don't want to think about those. So let's take this as the definition. And so this guy has some sheaf of rings called underlined K. So this one has some sheaf of rings called F upper star of underlined K. Okay. So this F upper star underlined K is a sheaf of rings. You can consider sheaves of modules over it. So one example, so there's an equivalence of categories. Between the category of locally constant sheaves of, let's say just underlined K modules on this example, this circle S1FP. And vector spaces, finite dimensional vector spaces over FP. So the equivalence takes a sheaf, and it sends it to its global sections. Which is a module over this ring. Here's another class of examples. Suppose I have a knot given on the complement of that knot. I have an integer many maps to a circle. Which I can detect by looking at the degree on homology. So let's say it's of degree n on the first homology. Then, there are finitely many isomorphism classes of modules over this sheaf of rings on S3 minus K for every, well, of rank R, for every R. So when R equals 1, and the prime is not too small. Okay, this finite set of, I might call them invertible sheaves of F upper star K modules on S3 minus the knot. The number of them is the Alexander polynomial evaluated at p to the nth power. So this Alexander polynomial, I guess there are different ways to normalize it. The ancient way to normalize it is it should be a polynomial with like a constant term and then some linear term. Okay. And no Laurent tail. And this this is some positive integer. And the primes that you have to leave out are the ones that divide this constant term.
So in particular, you didn't have
to be large compared to n. Not large compared to n, large compared to the not.
I mean, what is the map between xkmn and the not for circle, whatever?
Whichever, any map at all that has degree n on homology. Well, I don't think that this.
This for any n, you're saying you have this.
Yes, for every n, you have this. That you have this finite set, in fact, abelian group with this many elements. Well, so you can tell a little bit of the same story on any three manifold. On any three manifold, you have this multivariable Alexander polynomial. And if you, maybe you have to be a little bit careful count in the sense of orbifolds. In the sense of orbifolds, I should divide this by p minus 1, p to the n minus 1. We do an orbifold count. And this orbifold count is well behaved on a general free manifold, and it's closely related to the multivariate Alexander polynomial. I doubt that this point of view much illuminates the Alexander polynomial, but it at least suggests that the theory of F fields is not going to be boring, which is okay. So on a surface, okay, we have a genus 2 surface. So an F field, maybe it's a map to a circle, or maybe it's a sheaf of rings on the surface. And I'll maybe try to indicate what that sheaf of rings is by drawing an orange circle here. So I have some sheaf of rings. General fiber is K, and a monodromy around any curve here that doesn't cross that orange circle is just the identity. But then if it does cross the orange circle, it's a pth power map in one direction, and a p to the minus first power map in the other direction, pth root map in the other direction. Or equivalently, this circle is the fiber of this map to S1FP above some base point. So now, if I want to understand modules over this sheaf of rings, look, there are fundamental group of the surface has generators A1, B1, A2, and B2, and they're subject to this surface relation. So A1, maybe it goes around like that, and B1 goes around like that, and A2 goes around like that, and B2 goes around like that. And only one of these touches the orange circle here. Only one of them is detected by this F field. So the data of a local system of vector spaces over this local system of fields over the surface is the data of maybe, so an F upper star underline K module. Well, I can choose some basis in the fiber at this base point with the property that when I go around this one called A2, I get exactly exactly raise each coordinate of my vector to the pth power. So an F upper star underlined K module is given by a bunch of matrices, I guess three n by n matrices with entries in this algebraically closed field, subject to A1 times B1 times A1 inverse times B1 inverse times frob times B1, B2 times frob inverse times B2 inverse is equal to 1. And this part here amounts to raising each entry of B2, of the matrix B2, to the pth power. Write it.
I mean, this is a special case of the module, or are you saying every module I can?
Well, it should also include some matrix.
So I can always choose a basis in which that A2 will be Frobenius. But that means that I'll divide by a smaller gauge group, though, when I determine when two such are isomorphic. Just incidentally, the formula is A1. So we have three matrices, A1, B1, and B2, subject to, you can write it like this. This part of this left-hand side is known as the Lang isogeny. Lang applied to D2. Okay. So this is these three matrices give some kind of framed local system with a framing, I guess, along this whole A2 curve. And the so to count local systems here, I should divide by some kind of conjugacy of that framing, but it's really going to be a finite group acting by conjugation. Right, so it's a bit similar to the character variety of a surface group, to the space of representations of a surface group. I don't know, GLN of C or something. But there are no very big isotropy groups here, so every point is stable in the sense that its automorphism group is finite. So it's a but. Well, so that's maybe a good thing about it. A bad thing about it is that it does not really have a golden bracket. intersection form. So the usual character variety is an interesting complex symplectic manifold, maybe a Poisson manifold. There are a few. One problem with setting that up in characteristic P is that it's a little bit harder to do calculus in characteristic P. But maybe you would only want you could only hope for the cohomology class of that symplectic form to be defined. But even that is not really defined. Because it's a little confusing to explain why. But it's harder to do intersection theory with these twisted coefficients. Anyway, there's some variants. So, any automorphism at all, anything at all that has an automorphism can be kind of repurposed as a local system on a circle. So here are a few interesting ones, maybe. So for example, if I have any ring, or let's say a K-algebra, this Pieth power map also defines an endomorphism of this ring R, sending lowercase r to lowercase r to the P. This is not usually a bijection. When it is invertible, R is called a perfect ring. Okay, and then we can study maybe underline R on S1FP, some sheaf of rings on S1FP, and we can pull it back to different manifolds with F fields, and we can study modules over this different sheaf of rings. And that way you can set up some kind of functor of points, some kind of moduli problem, but that moduli problem only can be evaluated on perfect rings. So it's a so-called perfect scheme. Here's another example. So this Frobenius of K, it kind of lifts to characteristic zero. So a field of P elements has a characteristic zero analog called the p-adic numbers. Field of P square elements has characteristic zero analog. It's called Q sub p squared by analogy. The algebraic closure of FP has some kind of characteristic zero analog called Q subscript p to the infinity. So these are all what are called unramified extensions of the p-adic numbers. This is the maximal unramified extension of the p-adic numbers. And because it's unramified, automorphisms of this characteristic P field induce automorphisms of this characteristic zero field. So the pth power map here has some kind of field automorphism here that I'll just call sigma. Well, it's no longer raising to the power of, that's a sigma like that. It's no longer raising to the pth power, it's just some field automorphism. But you can do this, you can study induces a sheaf of rings, determines a sheaf of rings on S1FP called maybe QP infinity underlined. And let's see, before K was the algebraic closure of FP. So when we studied a sheaf of modules over this sheaf of rings K underlined, we got exactly modules for the fixed field, FP vector spaces. That's no longer true. So now local systems, because this is not an algebraically closed field, local systems of QP to the infinity modules over S1FP are what are called isocrystals. So it's a vector space over QP to the infinite power with an automorphism that is linear for this sigma, skew linear for that automorphism, field automorphism. These again make a semi-simple abelian category. But there are many many more simple objects. One simple object for every slope, for each positive rational number, called the slope. Well, so you could study these on a not complement, and you'll get something that's not finite anymore. If you fix the slope, you'll get a finite dimensional p-adic manifold, whose dimension is, I guess, the degree of the Alexander polynomial. I kind of suspect that it has a measure and that its volume is the Alexander polynomial again. I'm not sure about that. Okay, and then another thing you could do, another automorphism, right? If G, boldface to G, is a reductive algebraic group over FP. Well, these things are classified, not over a general field, but over FP, over a finite field. It is classified by its root data, by its root datum. Well, which is a little bit, it's basically a Dynkin diagram plus a little bit. Maybe if we were looking at simply connected algebraic groups, it would exactly be a Dynkin diagram. But since it's over FP, that Dynkin diagram also, you should remember something else about it, which is this automorphism. So, I don't know. There's an algebraic group associated to D4 with this diagram automorphism, and it's called this is called 3D4. It corresponds to an interesting group over FP. Just classifying, yeah, the form over K. And the automorphism is telling you how to descend that. And in general, that's a complicated Galois theory problem. But over finite field, it's a simple Galois theory problem. Well, I guess it's more because, sort of, it's because other cohomological invariants of the Galois group are pretty easy. So over the real numbers, the Galois group is also pretty easy, but this classification is complicated. Well, so that means that this S1FP, it carries some sheaves of groups. One for each algebraic group over FP. So I'll just call underlined G. I don't know. So a fiber is some algebraic group over an algebraically closed field, and then the monodromy is something interesting, having to do with the Dinkin diagram automorphism. One per reductive group over FP. And okay, and there's an equivalence of categories, case of groupoids. Where this is a sheaf of groups, so we can look at sheaves of torsors for them. So underlined G torsors on S1FP. So that makes some kind of groupoid. And which groupoid is it? It's the classifying groupoid for the FP points of this group. Over a point. So this is some finite group. Now, say I have a symplectic manifold. Okay, so maybe some people are interested in its Fukuya category. Some kind of category associated to a symplectic manifold. So a typical object is a Lagrangian submanifold together with a unitary connection. On the Lagrangian. So, what is that connection for? So, maybe you want to find some interesting moduli spaces of objects inside of this category. So if I take a Lagrangian submanifold and I move it around, maybe in a non-Hamiltonian fashion, but still preserving Lagrangianness, I'll draw like some curve on this moduli space, some real curve on this moduli space. What am I trying to say? These L's, they make a real manifold. And this nabla is for complexifying it. Or maybe a less weird way to put that is it's for making sure that this category is linear over the complex numbers. So what if you want to find interesting FP bar moduli spaces in symplectic geometry. Well, yeah, that's the only reason I want to. I don't know. So symplectic geometry, at least a little bit related to the topology of that manifold M and its Lagrangian submanifolds. And when you talk about the Foucaille category, you're seeing the kind of rational or complexified algebraic topology of those things. Maybe there's something more interesting going on elsewhere. But if, maybe it's I don't well. Yeah, I don't have any way to tell you that you should be interested in this question. But if you were, then you might be disappointed by the examples that come up naturally. So look, in order to... yeah.
So in the knowledge of the Lagrangian, what is the choice of the cycle that you had? I could have had a bunch of A cycles, right?
Say that again? Oh, on the circle.
On the curve.
On the curve, yeah.
A cycle, or non intersecting simple curves.
Yes.
Is this somehow analogous to a Lagrangian with fixed monotomy?
Well, in that story, if that story is related to a symplectic manifold, it's probably. At least the one that I told anyway about local systems on that surface. The symplectic geometry that's related to is that of the cotangent bundle of that surface. So if you wanted to do something like if you want to take the symmetric power of that surface, then I have no idea what
yeah.
No, it's doing something else. The F field. That circle. Well, that one that I drew anyway. That orange circle was like a branch cut or something, where you could describe some fundamental domain where the F field was constant. But it's that story. I mean, the three parts of this talk, or are there only two parts? One part of this talk is let's talk about local systems on manifolds, but that have been changed, twisted maybe by an F field. Then the second part of this talk is let's talk about Lagrangian submanifolds of symplectic manifolds, where each Lagrangian submanifold is equipped with such a local system.
Yes.
So if you want interesting FP bar moduli spaces inside of this Fukaya category, well, first of all, you had better find some way to define it over FP bar. And that can be done. You stick to exact symplectic manifolds. You make sure that omega is the derivative of some one form. You stick to exact Lagrangian submanifolds. And instead of putting U1 flat connections on them, you put maybe GL1 FP bar connections on them. And if you do that, you get answers that are not too interesting. So, like most of the arithmetic that comes when you talk about this Fukaya category comes when you start deforming away from these exact symplectic manifolds by compactifying them. So here's another thing. So this is just another thing that I tried. So how about putting an F field on M? And then studying Lagrangians.
So M is an exact symplectic
manifold. And we study Lagrangians L inside of there, together with local systems of F upper star underline K restricted to L modules. Okay, so you can set up like floor theory in this language. I mean, you could do it with any sheaf of rings, a locally constant sheaf of rings on a manifold. You could try to do it and it works fine for exact Lagrangians. So let's see if the examples are interesting. Let me think if I'm forgetting something. It's a lot like a B field. A B field is a class in H1 of the loop space of the manifold. An F field is a class in H0 of the loop space of the manifold. I'm not exactly sure if you could mix those two. But it the name is kind of reflects my wish that it was something a little bit like a B field. Yeah, okay, so say M is a circle, not just any circle, but this S1FP times R3. Well, which I'll try to understand really is the cotangent bundle of S1FP times R. So I want to study all the Lagrangians that are interesting in this manifold or are non-compact. So before I talk about what they are, I'd better describe some kind of boundary conditions. So So what are those going to be? Well, for example, So here's S1FP. Here's some factor of R, this factor of R. This goes from 0 to log P. So the Lagrangians that I want to study, they should have some kind of fixed boundary. So let's make sure L has, and roughly speaking, one of them, there'll be one boundary condition at the top and one at the bottom of this picture. So let's say L, the boundary of L, has a partition into two components. So top, union bottom. And at the top, I want it to end. I basically want the top to have only one component, and I'll want it to end on this circle. Sorry, so what is this a picture of? It's a picture of a circle in the plane. Let's take the conormal vectors that point, I guess, in this direction. So the union of these unit conormal vectors cut out a knot in the unit cotangent bundle of S1FP times R. And I want this circle to wrap that exactly once. So top inside of this boundary of L wraps this once. And then at the bottom, I'll have a more trivial picture like that. I want the bottom to wrap the conormal lift of that circle. But I want it to wrap it twice. Okay, so this bottom, it'd either be exactly one circle or two circles. But, and then you do the only thing that I really know how to do in symplectic geometry, which is to relate this problem, the problem of studying these Lagrangians, to constructible sheaves on that circle. So that's Nadler's Aslow. So the moduli of these things in the Foucaille category of M, well, kind of twisted by this F field F. Is isomorphic to a moduli space of constructible sheaves. On S1 times R, S1FP times R. Well, so maybe below and above this boundary condition, you'll just get zero.
The reason that it
would not have this F in there, but there's no problem with that at all. Okay, so what does Nadler-Zaslow say? It says, I have a Lagrangian, let's study some kind of floor homology of that Lagrangian against a cotangent fiber somewhere on this manifold. So those cotangent fibers aren't going to meet the Lagrangian at all. In this region, they'll meet it twice. So here I'm going to have some kind of two-dimensional vector space over K. Okay, and then there's some monodromy here. And that monodromy has to be skew linear. So by choosing some basis, I can make this V exactly isomorphic to, up to a change of basis, I can make this exactly K tensored with FP squared. This finite two-dimensional vector space over this finite field. In this region here, I'll have a line. I'll have some line inside of this vector space. it won't necessarily be FP rational. So in fact, when I transport it along this Frobenius map, I get exactly its image under raising every element of L to the pth power. So that's a line in here. And then this boundary condition, whatever the dictionary to constructible sheaves, it imposes some condition local to that crossing, which is that L and Frobel are transverse inside of V. Well, which is another way of saying that L should not be the same as Frobel. So this is a famous space. Look, this is, so I've chosen some basis. I'm taking a line in k squared. So that line has some projective coordinate, let's say x. So L might as well be z1, x1. And this condition says that x isn't different from x to the p. So in other words, the moduli space is p1 of k, of these constructible sheaves, it's p1 of k, and I subtract p1 of fp. And then because I chose some basis here, I should divide by that at the last step. So I should divide now at the last step by gl2 fp. Well, let me be not too careful about the difference between those things. This GL2FP in the denominator, it's really the boundary condition at the bottom. So there's also a boundary condition at the top. I could also have framed the top. And framing the top is a little weirder. Framing the top involves like taking this local system on the Lagrangian. What's the right way to say this? The F field on this circle, this circle at the top, is S1 FP squared. It's a double cover of S1 FP. So a rank one local system on that S1 FP squared, it's a FP squared line. So if I impose some boundary condition at the top, I'm going to get a GL1 FP squared torsor over this space. And there's a famous one of those, and that's which one it is. This is the Drinfeld curve. Well, here, this, I'll put it this way. This is isomorphic to the Drinfeld curve, which is something isomorphic to something like x comma y in k squared, such that x, y to the p, oh, I forget, x to the p, y is equal to is equal to either 1 or 1 of finitely many numbers related to fp squared. So it's some curve, some plane curve of degree p plus 1, and then I'll divide that by GL2FP times GL1FP squared minus.
Yeah, because, you know, it's
thank you.
Of, I mean, it's just exactly the first thing, which is the point of view. Take a point, you can take this Frobenius image, and then you apply the symplectic form to this
field. Ah, okay.
I mean,
SL2. In SL2, okay.
Yeah,
yes. Although I think probably because I'm writing GL2 here and not SL2, probably have some curve with several components, but maybe the same. Doesn't matter. Okay. Can I make just one point? One point that I want to make is that, for example, when p is equal to 2, this is an elliptic curve, the numerator anyway, is or has at least one component, which is the elliptic curve whose J invariant is 0 of this fraction.
Using the quotient by GL2 cross
GL1. Well, yes.
But I'm actually not sure what the section of chills is somehow presumably factorizes through each chills, right? I mean,
yes. Well, no. Does it? Yes. Does it?
Right. Like is P1 as you know as this P1 of which break closure might want to P1, then what's the section of chills on P1?
Well, it's linear fractional transformations in this x variable. Yeah. Okay. Yes. So this g.
Only one x field
Okay. So. What am I trying to say? We got an interesting moduli space by turning on this F field. So what is a delinguistic variety in general? Well, so you fix some algebraic group over FP. Let me tell this story using pictures that are a little bit like this. So you pick some FP point over FP, algebraic group over FP that has some Dinkin diagram. I don't know. Okay, draw that one again. 1, 2, 3, 4. And maybe I have some kind of annulus with boundary, and at the one boundary, I write down some simple reflections. 1, 2, 3, 4. That'll do. And then maybe there's even a automorphism here. Okay. And then I study G underlined G torsors here, together with B reductions. In between these simple reflections, and they should be related. They should be in exactly the general position the two B reductions can be in. That's labeled by that simple reflection. Okay, so that gives me some. Yes. So you'll get, there's some, I forget who is involved, Bruet and Michel maybe, that if you, there's some generalized linguistic variety where you can put any positive braid at the top. So some linguistic variety associated to a positive braid. And right, so these would be the ones corresponding to. Well, if this is this guy times this guy times this guy times this guy in the braid group.
Oh, so
you
have a sequence of simple
reflections. Yes. So this is some sequence. So there will be there's some easy invariance property that this has. If I presented this braid differently, I would get the same answer. Well, okay. A G torsor on the whole annulus, I guess, okay. Together with some B reductions at the boundary of this annulus in between these marked points, and the moduli of those, and then there's some. Well, the G is a local system of groups on the annulus. Yeah. Yeah. So, look, how much time do I have? What are Deligne lists? So, I don't know, the moduli of those are a Deligne listing variety. So what are Deligne listing varieties for? So if you set them up right, if I maybe frame both of these things, you get some variety y, and it has an action of the FP points of this group and the FP points of some maximal torus for that group. So the product of these two groups acts on this moduli space. So therefore, the cohomology, say a lattice cohomology of Y, is a bimodule. So it induces some map from the representation theory of this abelian group to the representation theory of this interesting non-abelian group called Deligne-Lustig induction. And let me call this sequence at the top here, I'll just call it like capital I. It's just a sequence of simple reflections. So I'll just call it DL sub I. Okay. What it's for building representations of G, which you don't a priori understand, out of representations of a torus, finite subgroup of a torus, which you do understand. And what are the good things about this induction? The essential property is of Deligne-Lustig induction is that, let's see. Well, one of them is that if I take the inner product just in the spring of the group of characters, complex or L-adic valued characters of this finite group, if I induce two things, DLI and DLJ, I get zero unless I and J map to the same conjugacy class in the Weyl group, same twisted conjugacy class. This is what same twisted conjugacy class in Weyl group. This is what Sasha is saying. So this is called disjointness of characters. And how do you prove this? Well, how do Deligne and Lustig prove this? They prove it by studying. So there's some variety called Y sub I, and there's some other variety called Y sub J. And if I take their direct product, that has a diagonal action of GFP. So if I divide by that GFP, I get some other variety over this algebraically closed field of characteristic P. And it encodes somehow by taking some traces of the actions of the other two tori acting on this thing, encodes these numbers. So what they do is they study this thing, and in fact they decompose it into algebraic tori. They give a stratification by algebraic tori. Okay, so some of the time, this there are some zero-dimensional tori which show up, and therefore there will be some interesting Euler characteristics. And some of the time, there are no interesting zero-dimensional tori, and this inner product is zero. So I just want to think about how you might see that in symplectic geometry. So this is probably the pictures that I'm about to draw are spectral networks or Fock-Gontroff things. It's just a talk by Gabella on Friday where he talked about BPS graphs, which is some special class of spectral networks, which these are probably in bijection with. I should say that, I mean, I've been thinking about how to relate these pictures that I have not drawn, that I'm about to draw, to like Lagrangian, the theory of Lagrangian surfaces. I've been thinking about it a lot with Eric Zaslow. So what is this product space? You have product of two linguistic varieties divided by a finite group. Well, it's exactly something like this. I have a boundary condition at the top and at the bottom of this annulus. Here's the simplest possible case where I just have SL2, let's say. So one node Dynkin diagram. And I study, G torsors on this. That's like the data of a vector space, just the data of some vector space over FP. And then at the boundary here, I have a B reduction, which is some line in the tensor product of this vector space with FP. So that might as well be a number in And here's another number. And then you're studying pairs z comma w such that, let's see, when I transport this, when I continue this z to the other side, I get z to the p. When I continue this z to the other side, I get w to the p, such that z is different from z to the p and w is different from w to the p. I divide by GL2, and that's the whole moduli space. And how can I find tori inside of this moduli space? So this is a pairing variety. Pairing variety parameterizes pictures like this, I mean, labeled by z's and w's. So hopefully this contains some tori. So how do you get some tori? Well, draw some graph on this surface. There are a lot of options, but let me just draw one. So like this one. Okay, and it's comforting maybe to make sure these have equilateral angles, something like that. Okay. So now this Z, this picture, I can think of it as extending to the regions of this diagram. So there's one called Z, one called W, Z to the P, W to the P. And I impose this open condition subject to the open condition that whenever two of these are adjacent, they should be, just transverse to each other, not equal to each other, subject to Z not equal to W, W not equal to Z to the P, that's these two. Z to the P not equal to W to the P, some of these are redundant. Z not equal to Z to the P, just some open conditions. W not equal to W. And then the claim is that this is a torus. So this parameterizes, say that again? Traces. Cross ratios, exactly. So I take a cross ratio associated to this edge and to this edge. So I get two cross ratios. So one of them is a cross ratio of maybe z to the p, w to the p, w. That's this one. But then I also, maybe the other edge kind of crosses the interesting part of this F field. So like this. More like that, okay. I think that's okay. Yeah, so this is, so once I cross this F field, this is Z to the 1 over P. No, this is still Z. This is Z to the 1 over P. This is W to the 1 over P. This is still W. Okay, and so now it's the cross ratio of this guy and z to the p, w to the 1 over p. I'm reading them I guess, counterclockwise around the edge. So another way to think of that, it's a local system of F upper star underlined K modules on the branched double cover of this torus that's branched at those two points. Well, so you can tell a story like that in general. In type A, you can relate these pictures to Lagrangian surfaces in the cotangent bundle of that torus. Maybe that's where I'll stop.
Similar pictures where you have different. So you're always using this Frobenius.
Yes.
Have any equivalent images for the Frobenius when there are different punctures of the surface? Or...
Sure, yeah. They all won't. Yes, you can do whatever you want. You need to give a. F fields are classified by H1. Of the surface with Z coefficients. So there are many of them. And on a annulus, there's only one of them really. So it's on an annulus, you get Deligne-Lustig theory. So for a thrice punctured sphere, you will have to pick some cohomology class on that sphere and go to town. I don't know what you'll get.
Can I say again, what's the relationship between what explained here and what was going on before? The purpose to explain how to understand this appearance of this story, or
I don't know if they need. This is just for fun, so this doesn't explain very much that Lustig didn't know in 1979 or anything. But so the point is to tell a story related to symplectic geometry of four manifolds. So what does this two-dimensional picture have to do with Lagrangians in four-dimensional space? Maybe that's your question.
Yes.
I have this picture to start with.
Yes.
Maybe now the boundary condition at the bottom is looks more like this. And there's a picture that I love to draw. So I'll draw it. Of how you change those spectral graphs into Lagrangian surfaces. So you first draw a hypersurface in the product of your, in this case, annulus with the real line. And can I do it justice? So at one end it will look like this, and then there'll be some line of double points in there, and then some other line. These are all double points. And at the other end, you get another thing like this. Okay.
So it also has this marking, like the C double as well.
So. Yeah. Each of these is really a line in some two-dimensional vector space. So it's describing a constructible sheaf on B, Those lines are some linear algebra data. Those lines in that two-dimensional vector space are some linear algebra data.
Yeah, you will use it to put some local systems from the Lagrangian.
You use it to do two things. You use it both to put a local system on a Lagrangian, and that construction is an equivalence of categories. And then you also use it to turn it into a constructible sheaf, maybe in this case, so irregular local system with some irregularity at the two boundary components. And that's what you do.
You had a little plastic. I mean, so the different vector networks twisted by various amounts give you different torus.
Yes. So if this were, you're getting completely different torus.
So
if you it's a version of a cluster variety. The word cluster variety, it seems to I don't know if it has a really Bureau of Standards definition already, but an emerging Bureau of Standards definition is that it should be symplectic, maybe it should at least be Calabi-Yau. It should carry some kind of tensor that behaves nicely with respect to in these cluster coordinates. And this doesn't seem to have one of those because there's not an intersection form. You can't cook up an intersection, a Goldman bracket on these, even on local rank one local systems on a surface. They don't make a symplectic manifold or Poisson manifold or anything.
But there are a bunch of points,
a bunch of torus charts. And you can write down change of coordinates maps, and I don't know, maybe it would help to compute the some people are working on whatever categorification of Lie groups maybe want to know the cohomology of these pairing varieties.
But can I think about this, how the it's taking the cluster variety and just writing the image in a P somehow?
I don't think so. I think it's nothing like any characteristic zero variety. I think it's
the main difference is the monodrome has been replaced by this Frobenius.
One of the monodromes is replaced by a Frobenius.
Okay.
Many of the others are just normal monodromes that commute with Frobenius.
Yes.
But you can't this is an interesting surface, which I don't know how it doesn't. If you just take A1, if you just take P1 times P1, and you divide by the diagonal action of GL2FP, that's a maneuver that you can't do in characteristic zero. But divide by GL2FP, that's a weird characteristic P thing. There's not a finite subgroup of GL2, or PGL2FP. There's not a finite subgroup of PGL2C that is very interesting that acts on this product of P1s. So this is a new kind of surface in characteristic P. It turns out that it's rational. It's not obviously rational. These cluster charts are the reason it's rational. The easiest way to parameterize them involves these fractional power of these 1 over P's in the exponents, which means that they're not really algebraic. I mean, they turn out to be algebraic, but not in such a canonical way.
Wait, but do you get actually some cluster variety do you get a cluster variety itself? I mean,
I don't think so.
No.
No, because I mean, you can write down something like a seed, in this case, that you would have. So in Fomin Zelovinsky, maybe you start out with like a skew symmetric matrix with integer entries. And here you'll start out with a skew symmetric matrix with entries that are. I'm not sure whether it should even be skew symmetric. You'll start out, you can write down something like seed data, which is just some numbers, but those numbers should have some denominators, some p's in the denominators in general. And
And so, but there will also be some kind of generalized formal commutations.
I hope so, although I haven't really worked them out. But I don't really expect them to be a special case of, yeah.
Any further questions? Thank you again.